Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Good morning. It is time to get up with the Sixers. Holy Harden, Batman, they're back in it. And James is the reason why. Meanwhile, the Suns are setting in the South after their legendary point guard has perhaps the worst game of his career. We're all over the NBA. And then, as we speak, the announcement of a magnificent Monday night matchup. Which of these stars will take center stage as it is schedule release week in the football world? All that and a whole lot more as we're getting up with you on this Monday, starting now. Delighted you were there. Delighted he's here. Graziano in our studio on a pretty day. And take a, speaking of pretty, we got a whole lot of handsome standing by today. We got Legler and Windhorst on the hoops. Saturday's handing out pancakes. Orlovsky's eating them. Let's do this thing. Let's start last night in Philadelphia. Heat and Sixers, Game 4, Eastern Conference Semifinals. And take a look at Joel Embiid. He's ready to go. And so are the fans. The mask is on. The game is on. And you know who was on? James Harden was on. Look at the feed inside. Embiid, yes, they're working together. Embiid had 24, but he wasn't the one we were worried about. This is the one we were worried about. James Harden, the step back three, where has that been? Look at the emotion from Harden, feeling it. Sixers up 8 at the break, and then in the fourth, James Harden would take over the game. That looks so familiar. 6 threes on the night for Harden. Embiid saying, that's what I'm talking about. They're up a dozen, and he's not done. Look at the fancy footwork. Lead back to 10. A spring in his step on the other end of the floor. Jimmy G. Buckets. The G stands for gets. Butler had 40 in this one, single-handedly keeping his team in it. But final 5 minutes, Sixers. James Harden just would not go away. Look at him taking it strong. Sixers by 7, just over 3 to play. Back to a 5-point game. Harden, catch and shoot. 41 minutes, 31 points for James Harden. That one gave the Sixers an 8-point lead, just over a minute. Still 8 points. Harden, dagger. 16 points in the fourth. James Harden fired up. We're all even at 2 games apiece. Hey, Joel, how about your guy?
That's the reason why he's here. That's the reason why we brought him. Since he's gotten here, he's been adjusting, based on what we need from him. You know, he's really the reason why, we won this game.
Just took what the defense gave me. Same shots, just made some. Nothing really changed, man. I made some shots. Obviously, that's, I guess, a game changer, but just being aggressive.
All right, so 16 of those 31, as we mentioned, came in the final quarter, as most in any quarter over the last 2 postseasons. He entered last night with a total of 4 points in the fourth quarter through the first 3 games of this series. So he can try and downplay the difference, but I can tell you, just watching, it certainly felt like it looked different to me. Let's bring in Legler and Windhorst. How about it, Timmy Legs? What was the difference that you saw in James Harden last night?
Well, first, Greeny, I'm going to own it. I've been saying repeatedly, I didn't think James Harden had that kind of performance in him, certainly not in this postseason, based on what we have seen for the last couple of months. And I think the difference was that the step back three was going in, and the trajectory was better, the lift was better, the separation was better. He was much more decisive getting into that shot. I feel like for over the last couple of months, certainly here lately, he has gone up and he's looked very tentative when he's releasing the basketball because he's not feeling it. He's not in that kind of rhythm, and maybe his legs didn't feel like he had enough lift to get it there. And you could just see he would shoot it and he would doubt himself. His shoulders would turn one way or the other. He'd run after some of them. He wasn't doing that last night. He was confident in getting into his shot with the rhythm he wanted off the number of bounces that he wanted. And for me, that sets up his entire game, because now you've got to guard him differently. You've got to get up on your toes, and it sets up his ability to get to the line, to get to the paint, draw guys, find people. But that 3-point shot has to be a legitimate threat for James Harden to be that effective as a scoring weapon. And last night, certainly it was.
And Harden is look, Wendy, he can pretend otherwise, but he has to have heard the criticism. He has to have heard the questioning. And you could almost see it in the emotion last night. He often plays with this sort of detached cool. But while he tried to downplay it after the game, he was during the game showed a level of emotion that I don't feel like we've seen from him in a long time. What'd you make of his night last night, Wendy?
Yeah, he actually, you mentioned it in the highlight. He made a catch and shoot three-pointer. Maybe Hemba will produce the one that happened last week that I forget, but I cannot remember the last time James Harden made a catch-and-shoot three-pointer because he spent all his time dribbling, and then taking a lot of bad shots. He was feeling confident in that shot. He looked light on his feet. And in general, what happened in these two games in Philadelphia is the Sixers made their threes. They shot the ball miserably in Miami the first two games. They come back up and Joel Embiid rejoins them. And of course, these things are related. And they have a lot more confidence shooting the three ball. They shot almost 50% on threes after shooting 22% on threes in the first two games. And Harden is the reason. All of those highlights in the fourth quarter are him hitting the three ball. And him hitting the three ball without Embiid on the court, which was huge. So I think if you are Philly, you are saying, had Joel Embiid been in games one and two, and we would have had this kind of confidence as a team, Harden and elsewhere, it may be 3-1. We go back to Miami looking to take the series, and certainly Harden's confidence level increased as well.
And look, we haven't even said the names Tyrese Maxey or Danny Green in this conversation, but those guys gave them contributions yesterday. So, Legs, give me a sense of where we stand right now. A best of three, Miami has home court advantage. The Sixers have their star center back. Where's the edge?
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use the code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use the code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Well, listen, you're going to go with the home team in this situation, particularly when it's a one seed. But, Greeny, here's the deal. One of those two guys, either James Harden or Tyrese Maxey, as long as one of them has a special night, they're going to win this series. And that's the key. If Tyrese Maxey is just okay on a given night and Harden struggles, they can't win this series because Tobias Harris is going to do what he does as your fourth best player. I expect Embiid actually to get better now each game. So it comes down to the guards. And then obviously James Harden can answer all of this if he continues to play this way. So I hate to say, you know, it's a big question mark, but it still is because one game out of James Harden like this, when he has looked the way that he has over the last couple of months, is not enough for me to definitively say, oh, James Harden is back to that level. Because listen, even if we think he's feeling great right now and he's very confident, he's also had moments when he struggled in the past under immense playoff pressure. And guess what? Each night, the pressure is going to be amplified going forward. So can he continue to answer the bell time and time again for this team? That's what the series is going to hinge on. I said before, it was in his lap, and I'll say it again. It's in James Harden's lap because he has to be very, very good. Maybe not like he was last night, but he's got to be very good for them to win 2 out of 3 remaining.
What do you think, Wendy?
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than 1 rebound or will a player have less than 3.5 assists?
Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
So Doc Rivers has gotten heat throughout his career for not making good adjustments in series. You have to give him his due. He began trapping Tyler Hero. Hero is so vital for the Heat because they're shaky in half-court offensive sets, and Hero was neutralized. The Heat weren't ready for the traps. Hero hasn't handled it. And you throw in that Kyle Lowry is clearly being hampered by this hamstring injury. He was frankly terrible in these two games, probably shouldn't even be playing. And when you have Hero being neutralized and Lowry limping, The Heat are having trouble getting offense. The Heat fans are clamoring to get Duncan Robinson, who has not played in this series, in there because they need outside shooting. You have to like your chances if you're Philly, taking Joel Embiid with you on the plane to Miami, especially if they can't get Tyler Hero reanimated in this series.
Yeah, Lowry was talking openly and honestly about that injury after the game. It doesn't sound good. He's a tough guy and he's going to give it a go, but it does not appear those things don't get better that quickly. So that one is a fascinating 2-2 series. Maybe before it started, we could have seen that coming. No one saw coming what happened in Dallas yesterday. Holy smoke. Chris Paul and the Suns taking on Luka and the Mavericks. Closing seconds of the first half. Paul had three fouls. They took him out of the game. They put him back in for the final offensive possession, and he does this unimaginably, chasing his own rebound. He picks up his fourth foul with 1 second left in the second quarter. And Doncic says, I can feel it. Mavs up a dozen. Early third. Wait, it gets worse. This is going to be called an offensive foul on Chris Paul. He sneaks out in front of the defender and then stops. It's the right call. That's his fifth foul with 9 minutes to go in the third. Not ideal to say the least for the Suns. And then Luka getting it going, backing down Cameron Payne, then telling Payne he's too small. Mavs up nine. Early fourth, Paul checks back in. And it felt like 15 seconds later this happened. Chris Paul reaches his hand in the cookie jar and he's gone. He had more fouls than points in this game yesterday, an astonishing performance. And speaking of astonishing, Luka's got the footwork spectacular. He's feeling it 30 seconds later. Luka, Maxi Kleber, the Mavs got 36 points off their bench in this game. Doncic had 26, 7 boards, 11 assists. He's the best player on the floor, and the Mavericks have evened up that series. Look, Chris Paul celebrated his 37th birthday on Friday. In the two games he's played since then, including that night, he has scored 17 points and committed 9 turnovers. He's had almost the same number of personal fouls as he's had assists. It's just been a disaster for Paul ever since he had the magnificent game in game 2. So I mean, let's start there. Tim Legler, a player of his stature and all of that, how do we explain the performance and some of the mental mistakes, just putting himself in those situations that he did yesterday when already in so much foul trouble?
Yeah, it's really hard to explain because you're looking at the combination of factors that led to Chris Paul not being included in that game. Some his own doing, some just not smart plays when you're already not getting benefit of the doubt on calls earlier. There was also a couple, he's just wrong place, wrong time. And then I thought there was a couple other ones that I just absolutely disagreed with the call. Any way you slice it, when you're in that kind of foul trouble the entire game, there's no way you can get into rhythm on the other end of the floor. I just thought it was a very strange game for Chris Paul. Even the lack of emotion that he showed after these calls. Like, at no point did he even react to anything. So I don't know what was going on with him, with his emotions, but I know this. Chris Paul knows the pressure's on him. People are watching him. He is going to have a huge bounce back game, I believe, in game 5 in Phoenix.
You used an interesting expression, Wendy, this morning in our call before the show to describe what you think happened to CP3 on the floor last night.
Yeah, it's an old man phrase, but he's an old man point guard. He is hoisted on his own petard here because the Mavericks outflopped and outsmarted him. What the Mavericks did to Chris Paul is what Chris Paul has been doing to people for years. And I am surprised he allowed himself in foul trouble to continue his antics. That fifth foul early in the third quarter where he tries to bait Jalen Brunson into a foul, you don't take that gamble when you've got four fouls. And Jason Kidd after the game had this wry smile saying, "We learned it from the best," basically saying, "We turned your game on you, Chris Paul." Mm. He had a 7-turnover first half in game three. That is unbelievable and unacceptable. And this game where, again, he, regardless of whether you think the six fouls a ticky-tack foul, he cannot do that with five fouls with 9 minutes to go in the game. So one of the things that happened in this game, Luka Doncic goes 9 of 25, and the Mavericks still win. That is an unacceptable situation for the Suns and something they're going to have to re-examine beyond the Chris Paul issues, how they've decided to defend Luka Doncic, because the other guys are beating them right now.
All right, guys, stay close. A little later in this hour, I will ask you a question I never would have thought I'd hear myself ask. Could the Mavericks actually win this best of seven against the defending conference champs? We'll do that as we continue. Meanwhile, more basketball in the conversation as we roll. Was this a dirty play? Have lines been crossed in what has been a chipping series between Golden State and Memphis? We'll get you there. Plus, as we speak, the announcement of a magnificent Monday night matchup. Which of these stars will take center stage? You'll find out next as we get up with you on ESPN.
Dell Tech Fest starts now. To thank you for 40 unforgettable years, Dell Technologies is celebrating with anniversary savings on their most popular tech. For a limited time only, save on select next-gen PCs like the XPS 13 Plus, where you can make the everyday easier with Windows 11. Unleash more possibilities with cutting-edge systems, their most advanced features, and great prices. Plus, curate your dream setup with deals on select monitors, mice, and more must-have electronics and accessories. When you shop online at Dell.com/deals, you'll have access to state-of-the-art technology to match your forward-thinking spirit and free shipping on everything. Anniversary savings await you for a limited time only at Dell.com/deals. That's Dell.com/deals.
We're back on Get Up, and we are brought to you by Verizon. Verizon is going ultra, so you can too. All right, this is NFL schedule release week. Any minute now, Joe Buck and Troy Aikman are going to announce a Monday night matchup on Good Morning America. So let's talk about what matchup you can't wait to see. Orlovsky, how about you?
I want to see the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the New Orleans Saints. Tampa Bay in the last four regular season games, 0-4 against this Saints football team that I think is actually a better roster this year than it has been over the last 2 years, and Tampa Bay is a worse football team talent-wise. I can't wait to watch these two teams play.
I like that one. Graziano, how about you? What matchup are you waiting for?
Chiefs-Bengals. This, think back to the end of last year. This was the AFC power matchup nobody saw coming. It was supposed to be Bills-Chiefs. Bills-Chiefs was a great game, but the Bengals got them the next week in the AFC Championship, a couple weeks after beating them in the regular season. Joe Burrow called Kansas City the second-best team in the AFC. When that game was over, want to see what lingers from last year.
Yeah, he was wrong. They may not even be the second-best team. Hey, Jeff Saturday, what game are you looking forward to?
Bills Chiefs. Listen, when you think about this, we're rewriting rules because of this game. Everybody's upset because we can't play defense in regulation, so now we're going to reset playoff rules. We got two of the best quarterbacks in the NFL going head-to-head once again. And again, can the Bills make this big step up against the Chiefs? I absolutely love this matchup. I think it's going to be one of the premier matchups. But all because of the rule changes that Graziano and Orlovsky were all for, I was against. But let's reset it, play it again.
Well, actually, Jeff Saturday, the first time they changed this rule is because of you. You and your buddy Peyton never got on the field in one playoff game. There was a playoff game where Peyton Manning didn't get on the field in overtime, and that's when they first changed it. And so now, Jeff, I mean, you know, you're pointing the finger, but you should be pointing a thumb, Mr. Saturday.
Hey, let me tell you something, Greeny. You're lucky I ain't in that studio with you right now, dude.
What is
that? I'm getting backhand of this thing right now, talking that nonsense. Listen, I'm an old lineman. I don't care how they play outside. It don't matter to me.
Let's make a quick note here.
Let's go play it for real. Listen, all these overtime rules, they're set up by guys like Dan and other Dan. They want to see everybody get a chance to play with the ball, blah, blah, blah. Let's go win it in regulation.
Man, okay, fair enough. I don't know how that was my fault. Score that one, E1, if you're keeping track at home. Let's talk about the Bills a minute. Again, we're waiting for the announcement. It'll be on GMA at any moment now. Joe and Troy will announce one of our big matchups. But let's talk about the Bills. To me, they're an interesting team because as we sit here, you know, the Titans were the number one seed last year and the Chiefs have sort of been the traditional powerhouse. And it's the Bengals who were the defending AFC champs. But Dan Orlovsky, are the Bills actually the best team in the AFC, maybe even in the whole NFL?
The Bills are the best team in the NFL. This is a football team that is offensively as explosive as anybody in the league and defensively had the best defense in football. I want to make sure and remind everybody that, again, this was the best team in football last year, and this is what they've added this year. They've added Von Miller. They drafted Kyer Elam from Florida in the first round, a cornerback that's going to be a phenomenal NFL pro. They drafted James Cook, a tailback that's going to be a dual-threat Alvin Kamara type of player. They've added Roger Saffold on the offensive line that's going to be a dominant player for their offensive line. And a sneaky good signing in Jamison Crowder, a slot receiver. We're talking about a football team that has, this is an argument, best quarterback in football, whether you want it to be Patrick or Josh or Aaron Rodgers, best quarterback in football. And they've got a roster that is 1 through 53 better than anybody. And now they've reloaded with superstar talent. This is the best team in football.
What do you think, Jeff?
I agree with him. Here's my problem with that, though. As we talk about their roster, we're setting up numbers, we're doing all this thing, and I fully agree with Dan. Like, everything he's saying is spot on, absolute truth. The problem for the Bills is they haven't won the big one yet. They continue to be, quote, the best team that never gets it done. Now they've lost their offensive coordinator. They're going to have to reset with Brian Daboll being gone now. Can they do that, and can they stay in phase with Josh Allen and the progression he was making? Or will he kind of go backwards a little bit trying to do it under a new OC? So when I'm looking at this football team, I fully agree. Everything points to the Bills being the best, but they find ways to lose. Again, let's go back to the playoff game, the last game. They have – I mean, they should be able to stop this team in regulation. With the number one defense, they don't do it. They keep finding ways to not be, quote, the best team. That's the biggest concern for me.
And they also have to hold off the hard-charging Jets that I know everyone is talking about. Graziano, are the Bills the best team in the NFL?
Yeah, I think they have the best roster in the NFL. I think Dan is absolutely correct, and I'll even add one more. Tre'Davious White, their star cornerback, didn't have at the end of last year. He's likely coming back from his injury. That'll make them even better. So, yeah, they have the best roster, but Saturday's point is correct. They haven't been able to get past the Chiefs when it matters. Yes, if he calls tails instead of heads or vice versa, they probably win that game. But the fact is they didn't, and they know that it stings. They believe they're the best team. Look, going into last year, it was like, you know, people were talking about the Patriots and can the Patriots bounce back. And the Bills were like, we know we're better than the Patriots. And they went out and they proved it. They feel the same way about the Chiefs, and they're determined to prove it. But they're not going to get a chance to do that until January when it really, really matters. The point on Daboll is important. They kept some continuity, elevating Ken Dorsey from quarterback's coach to offensive coordinator. But I've talked to Josh Allen about this, and he credits a lot of his success and development to the fact that he had the same coordinator the first 4 years. So we'll have to see how that affects it.
So that's a division, of course, that Tom Brady owned forever. And speaking of Brady, you know, they say that some pictures are worth 1,000 words. Well, this one is worth a lot more than that. We'll call it Meanwhile on Planet Goat. Did you see the picture that Brady posted from the Miami Grand Prix yesterday? This is from left to right, Lewis Hamilton, Michael Jordan, David Beckham, and Tom Brady. It is goats only. Oh. Orlovsky, who's the goat of all goats in that photo to you?
Well, if I had to rank them 1 through 4, first of all, David Beckham's really short. I would go greatest of all time. I'd go Michael Jordan. Then I'd probably go Tom Brady, Lewis Hamilton, David Beckham.
What do you think, Jeff?
I love the list. MJ. Former Tar Heel. Set the world.
Oh, God,
listen, global phenom. I mean, we got to go there. I'm a homer. I'm all about it. But that's got to be number one. I go Brady, too.
Yeah.
Although, globally, I would say Beckham is probably higher than Brady. But here, and I'm a football guy, I'm going with Brady.
Yeah.
What do you think, Graziano?
I hate to say it, but I agree with Orlovsky's list. I would order them the same way.
It's a good Monday, boys.
The goats of all goats. I will say this, and there is no bigger Michael Jordan fan in the world than me. But Michael Jordan needs to borrow one ring from Brady if he's going to match him. I mean, that's just the way it goes. Brady's got one additional digit. So now Jeff Saturday's going to smack me, and Michael Jordan's going to smack me. Here we go. As we continue, it's been a testy series marked by hard fouls and hard feelings. Did Jordan Poole break the code grabbing Ja Morant's knee? I will ask that question. We'll get a direct answer. Plus, Jeff Saturday handing out pancakes. But this edition will be anything but normal. You'll see why as we continue and bring the syrup. It's Get Up on ESPN. All right, we're back on Get Up. And moments ago on Good Morning America, our new teammates, Joe Buck and Troy Aikman, revealed the matchups for a special Week 2 showcase event with both ESPN and ABC airing an NFL game on the same night. We will have a 7:15 Eastern on September 19th, Titans-Bills, a huge matchup in the AFC. And then at 8:30 Eastern on ABC, we will have the Vikings and the Eagles. Two games, one night, ESPN and ABC, four continuous hours of football across the Disney Network. So a fascinating opportunity for fans. That should be a great deal of fun. Speaking of fun, Jay Williams in our studio. Jay, Will, we opened with James Harden's performance, 31 points last night. Take us through it. What did you see from James last night?
Offensively, he was hot from the outside. He got himself going, but more so it was the passing, Greeny. It was the vision. It was him making everybody else around him in the game easier.
And it felt like he played with a level of emotion that we just haven't seen from him very much.
Well, he was aggressive. He went to the free throw line 10 times. You want him attacking. Like, look, he still didn't have the same blow-by speed, even though we saw him blow by somebody there. But his change of speeds and how he got into the lane mattered ultimately.
He played 41 minutes. He scored 31 points. And he evened up this series. His Sixers, an 8-point win. They're now tied at 2 games apiece. Harden snapping a 13-game streak without topping the 25-point mark in the postseason, dating back to last year as a Net, the second longest streak of his playoff career.
But see, Greeny, when your team shoots 49% from the three and they get 48 points from the 3-point line, that's the question for Miami. Duncan Robinson, where are you? You have played 1 minute in this overall series thus far. Eric Swisher needs to make some adjustments.
Yeah, it's not Duncan's fault. Right?
No,
I mean, it's Bode not playing, and we'll see. That series tied up at 2 games apiece. Meanwhile, Jay, let's segue to what one of the biggest stories of the weekend clearly was, the knee injury sustained by the young superstar, Ja Morant, as the Grizzlies were getting blown out by Golden State in Game 3. He limped off the court late in the fourth after Jordan Poole grabbed his right knee during a trap near half court. Now, Morant did not talk to reporters after the game. He did then tweet later in the night, broke the code. That's obviously in reference to what Steve Kerr had been saying early in the series about Dylan Brooks. He subsequently deleted that post. Mm-hmm. Ja did. In the meantime, here's what both coaches had to say.
Ja was playing great, feeling great all game. And, you know, the grab of the knee is what triggered the potential injury and why we took Ja out of the game. So nothing's changed from there in terms of that was the play that triggered this.
I watched the play. There's nothing to comment on.
All right, Steve Kerr clearly had been the one who created the broke the code and all that kind of stuff. And so, again, Tim Legler, Brian Windhorst, and Jay Will, I will start with you. Was the Jordan Poole play on Ja, is that a dirty play? Is that the breaking of a code?
No, it looked awkward. I didn't think it was dirty. I think if you're talking about awkward plays, even the play that you had before that, Desmond Bane diving into the legs for a loose ball of Jordan Poole when the ball is kind of nowhere in the play, that could have been deemed more of a dirtier play to me than this one. But this to me, and I get what Ja's saying, it's ultimately a bad look when you lose a game by 20 plus points and then afterwards you say broke the code on your knee, even though you deleted it. It just seems like it's excuses when I want Ja to say, hey, look, they played better than us today.
You know, Wendy, you were making a similar point, and that maybe, you know, the Grizzlies, we've wondered about their youth and inexperience, and maybe a little of that is showing here.
Let's just be honest. I mean, it's terrible that Ja Morant appears to be injured here and is not sure we're going to play tonight. There was no comparison between this play where Jordan Poole appears to be reaching for the ball and what happened with Dylan Brooks earlier in the series. It's not comparison. And maybe Steve Kerr went a little overboard with his, you know, break the code comments. But the way the Grizzlies were sort of campaigning for a suspension, declaring that they were going to go to the league office here, that's just not appropriate for what's going on. And, you know, one of the things I love about the Grizzlies is their exuberance and their enthusiasm. but they get a little, you know, too excitable at times. They need to play with a little bit more and act with a little bit more maturity. I really hope Ja can play. I feel terrible about this, but this was not an intentional play. You don't have to freeze it frame by frame to understand that.
And so, Legs, then I wanted to ask you, as one, you played a lot of years in the league, you played in a more physical area, you played in playoff games. There's been a lot of talk. We've seen some ugly plays. Is this a dirty series? Has this series had gone beyond the pale in moments, in your opinion?
No, not at all. I think the only dirty play was the play by Dylan Brooks on the breakaway. I think that's a very dangerous play. I've looked at this replay here with Jordan Poole and Ja Morant 10 times. And I keep saying to myself, unless Jordan Poole is either James Bond or, for our older viewers, Maxwell Smart, and he was able to somehow extract a tiny hammer from the center of his hand that hit Ja Morant in the knee, I just don't see how we're making anything out of this other than the fact that, hey, Ja Morant is a superstar, and he's the face of this franchise, and now, you know, he's got a knee injury, but to think in some way that that's a dirty play on a part of Jordan Poole, I just can't even figure out, with that amount of contact and what he did, that to me, completely incidental, by the way, how that caused any sort of injury on the part of Ja Morant. It's just a real head scratcher for me. But to answer your question, this series has not been dirty in any way, shape, or form. The only dirty play was the Dylan Brooks hard foul on Gary Payton.
Feels worth mentioning that the Grizzlies this year were spectacular playing without Ja Morant. Now, he's been so good, it seems ridiculous to even bring that up. But for whatever it's worth, they were 19-2 this year, I think, in games that Ja Morant didn't play. So his absence doesn't necessarily mean they have no chance whatsoever to win tonight. Quick thought on that.
I don't think they have a chance to win tonight.
He's
averaging 38 points.
To be honest with you, I kind of agree with that.
Not tonight. Basketball is different.
As I was saying it, I was thinking, this is a stupid thing to be saying, Greenberg. Move on to something else. So let's do it. Let's go to the East. The Celtics trying to even things up with the Bucks tonight, and what a series that has been. All right, let's go through it. Game one, Giannis did not shoot the ball well, 9-for-25, but he did an excellent job setting up teammates. He had a triple-double, and the Bucks won convincingly in Boston. Then we went to game two, and that was a Boston D party. The Celtics making Giannis's life miserable. He was 11-of-27 from the floor, and the Celtics won easily. Then we went back to Milwaukee, and game three Saturday was unbelievable. We had for you on ABC, Giannis, spectacular, 42 points. And then the game ended in ridiculously dramatic fashion. This tip-in by Al Horford right there came about a tenth of a second too late, and the Bucks held on to win. Giannis averaging 31 points, 11 boards, 9 assists in the series. Jason Tatum, meanwhile, looking to bounce back. He shot just 21% from the floor in game three, his second lowest in a playoff game in his career. A quick thought on that, if I can, from my dookie here. I mean, Jason Tatum, who has emerged as a superstar in the NBA. He is a lot of people voted for him first team All-NBA. That was a stunningly bad performance from him on Saturday, yes?
Yeah, it was. But there's a bigger point here, Greeny. I really do think the NBA got it wrong with the Marcus Smart foul. Mm-hmm. Because naturally, as a basketball player, what you're trained, the way people have been training over the last couple years, is if your arm becomes extended as I get a dribble handoff,
I'll foul you.
I'm automatically going into my shot rhythm, right? And the fact that you look at the time and situation, understanding that there's less than 5 seconds, I don't know how you couldn't be coming off. As soon as I saw Drew Holiday's arms extended into my chest, I'm going into my natural shot rhythm. So I still, my mind is blown with how they came up with the decision that only gives you 2 free throws, should have been a 3-shot foul.
Not only that, but they doubled down in the final 2-minute report. They said it was the right call. Clearly the Celtics were upset about that afterwards. That said, that was Saturday, and now they got to come back and play a critical game four tonight. So I would ask you, Legs, where do you see the edge in this? I mean, Saturday clearly was anybody's game. It came down to the final 1/10 of a second. Where do you see the edge in this series right now, Legs?
Edges with Milwaukee. You know, I thought they were going to win the series going in. And here's something you need to look at. You know, look at game one. Giannis Antetokounmpo, by his standards, was not very good in game one, and he was by far the most dominant player on the floor. So, and now he gets to game three, where he really overwhelms them. And I thought they did a great job of getting him the ball in places where he could play more like a power forward or a center. You know, I always give him credit because he's basically like a center with a handle, because he plays point guard a lot for that team. But he didn't play that way in game three. He went down and he caught the ball so he could be more decisive against these smaller defenders,
and overwhelm them and get to the rim. And I just thought his approach to the game was special. He had a breakthrough last year, I think, mentally and psychologically, and that he could get it done under pressure however he needed to. So for me, the fact that they're up 2-1 and they survived that, and I, by the way, I completely agree with Jay, that should have been three free throws. Wasn't. And now Milwaukee has a 2-1 lead, and they know they control things, and they've got the most dominant player that's going to find a way to put his stamp on the game every single night, whether he's making shots or not.
And Wendy, you made an interesting comment to me this morning about the significance of tonight's game, in your opinion.
Yeah, I've been with this series. I'm in Milwaukee right now. Being here, feeling this series, my view is that the winner of tonight's game is going to win the series. I'll put a little asterisk on that because we're still not sure whether Chris Middleton might be a late entrant into the series if it gets to game 6 or 7. But this is skin tight. It is skin tight. And really, Jason Tatum, if he wants to be a finals MVP type player, you step up in tonight's game. Ime Udoka has to come up with a game plan to get him in better situations. He didn't always have the best matchup. They've got to help him as a team. But Jason Tatum versus Giannis Antetokounmpo, who has the better game, will win tonight's game, and I think will ultimately win this series.
Okay, excellent. You know what? And guys, if I seem distracted, it's because I have just been told, and I'm looking at it right here. Woj tweeted 1 minute ago, Denver Nuggets center Nikola Jokic has been voted the NBA's most valuable player for a second consecutive season. A formal announcement is expected this week. Let me go around the horn super quick. Right guy to win the award, yes or no?
I think it was the right guy, but Joel Embiid is still Embiid. He could be an NBA champion, and that's way more. That's worth more to me than getting an MVP.
Right. Embiid's going to be aggravated, though, that he didn't win, right?
Yeah.
Legs, was this the right MVP?
Look, you can't go wrong with the pick. I had Joel Embiid basically probably from early February on. I didn't see anything he did to lose it. He got run down in the home stretch by Nikola Jokic, and give him credit. And I know the metrics point to Jokic. There's no doubt about that. But for me, Joel Embiid carried that entire franchise, and he never really let up to any extent. He didn't get hurt. I just didn't see how it could be taken out of his hands when I thought he had a firm grip on it. So it's subjective, and my pick was Joel Embiid.
How about you, Wendy?
I voted for Embiid, but I knew Jokic was going to win. His statistics, and a lot of voters today pay attention to advanced statistics, were overwhelming in his favor, and that's why he's winning. My vote was for Embiid, and I don't want to change it. I don't want to take it back.
Well, it's funny because everyone I've asked said they voted for Embiid, and yet somehow Woj is reporting that Jokic is going to win.
All the pressure now is on Denver next year with Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr. come back, a guy who's won MVP 2 times in a row. You better start winning championships.
That's right. Well, Giannis won 2 in a row and then won a championship. We'll see if Jokic can do the same. All right, guys, awesome. Thank you. As we continue, Tom Brady is running it back in Tampa. Will he even be able to win his own division? One member of our crew says, not so fast. You'll hear that coming up. This is Get Up on ESPN.
As the NBA playoffs advance, we know a couple of things. Stars will shine and the tension will mount. Get Up has the voices telling you what each win and loss means and how the biggest names are affected. Get Up. 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday on ESPN.
All right, time for Unbeatable Plays, brought to you by Xfinity. James Harden last night closing out a big game for the Sixers with 2 big 3s late. Those are 6 of his 31 points on the night. He was 6 of 10 from behind the arc. Sixers even up that series game 5 tomorrow night in Miami. Meanwhile, I've got my whole NFL squad here today, and OTAs are rapidly approaching, so we're looking for some big picture takeaways. Jeff, Saturday, as we sit right now, what's your big picture takeaway in the NFL?
Los Angeles Rams are overlooked. Listen, everybody's talking about guys leaving and going to the AFC, blah, blah, blah. How about Bobby Wagner signs here? How about Allen Robinson signs here? Les Snead's done a great job of bringing in talent. OBJ may end up being back there. This is a team that got hot. By the way, the Bucs went there early in the season and got beat down. This is a very good football team led by Matthew Stafford. I think everybody's kind of ignoring the noise after they win the Super Bowl. This is a very overlooked football team, in my opinion.
I like it. Orlovsky, how about you? Give me your upcoming takeaway for the season.
It's not a for sure thing that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are going to win their own division. Tampa Bay is a very good football team, but no one is respecting or paying enough attention to the New Orleans Saints. I think that the New Orleans Saints are a better football team this year than they were last year. We're adding a top five receiver to this football team in Michael Thomas. They still have Alvin Kamara. They drafted a top 15 receiver. This defensive line that has dominated the Bucs offensive line in the past few years is still intact, and the Bucs offensive line is worse than it was last year. The New Orleans Saints are going to be really, really good this year.
Yeah, the receiver they drafted, Chris Olave, out of Ohio State, a lot of people are excited about. Now, Donna, before I find out whether you agree with him or not, there's two huge ifs.
Stop shaking.
If Jameis Winston is really fully healthy,
right,
and if Michael Thomas is really fully healthy and back, then I fully agree with Orlovsky. But those feel like ifs to me as we sit right now. What do we know?
And I'll add another one, right? I mean, Dennis Allen, the new head coach, if he can fill Sean Payton's shoes. Payton was such a huge part of everything for the last decade plus. They are expecting Michael Thomas to be back. And Jameis Winston is on track to be good for week one. Obviously, no certainty there, but they've been pleased with his progress in his recovery. So I think they do expect to have both those guys on the field when the season starts.
Well, so you see in there, the only time that Tampa beat them was in the playoff game, obviously the most important one. Drew Brees threw a bunch of picks in that game. Saturday, you buying it?
No, I'm not buying it. Listen, this is what I love. I love Monday Dan. Monday Dan just fuels the fire. Then I got another Dan sitting in there understanding and at least giving some. How about a head coach that's 8-28 as a head coach replacing not only a fantastic head coach, but one of the best play callers in the NFL? You have a quarterback coming off an ACL. You have a receiver that you're saying is a top five that hasn't played because of injury. Like, all those things, you can't just mask over them and act like they don't happen. And then you have Tom Brady, who you just called the second best on the greatest list of all time, coming back after retirement for like a week. You know he's driven. Like, all arrows tell me you have lost your mind, Monday Dan. I'm just letting you know.
All right. So, first of all, it's convenient that you say, well, New Orleans quarterback's coming off of an ACL surgery, but fail to mention that Tampa Bay's wide receiver's coming off of an ACL injury. You bring up Dennis Allen's record. Jeff, dude, in 2013 or 2012, I think, when he was the head coach of the Raiders, his starting quarterback was a 34-year-old Carson Palmer, okay? So he had Carson. Do you know who their starting quarterbacks were the next year after that? It was Terrell Pryor, Matt McGloin, and Matt Flynn. Ooh. You wanted him to win a bunch of games in Oakland with those quarterbacks? Like, come on. And I understand. Like, I'm fascinated that, Todd Bowles is the head coach of Tampa Bay, and it's his second year as a head coach, so he'll learn more. And that's seen in a positive light. But now it's Dennis Allen's, and we fail to say that is a very similar situation. Oh, also, they added Tyrann Mathieu, who's going to lead the league in picks in that defense.
I'm going to leave it there for the moment. Graziano, who wins that division, Tampa or New Orleans?
Oh, I'm still going to go with Tampa, but I think it's close race.
All right, fair enough. Wait, leave it there.
Yes!
Because right now, hold on,
you
everyone's
it
hungry.
Ain't close, bro.
It's breakfast time. Let's do some pancakes.
Ooh.
Set them down is a keeper. That is a Tuesday staple.
Get some of this. Get some of that. Throw them out the club. Swagoo, throw them out the club. You see them? One pancake, two pancakes, three pancakes. Ooh.
All right. I started jumping, and a good example of why I shouldn't jump, my microphone pack immediately fell off me. So I'm just going to stop jumping and let Jeff do what he does best. We have NBA postseason pancakes. Saturday, take it away.
Hey, listen, this is the first. Yeah, I usually don't give this to basketball, but we've had some fantastic plays. I'm going to start with Andrew Wiggins. Now, listen, talk about flushing. Oh. Look at the move at the top. Oh, my goodness. You talk about hanging it. Just get some of that. Big boy took out another big boy on his way. And my favorite point was the drive in. Everybody was making business decisions, trying to get out of the way. Not you. Get some of that, little man. I absolutely love it when they flush down. One pancake. I like it. He's big man, big man. I like it. Number two, listen. I'm petty, and I'm all about it. Orlovsky just saw it. Grayson Allen getting a hip check. This is my favorite. Listen, you know he's the trip man. He's always getting after people. He got some of his own medicine. This is nothing better than watching a dookie take an L like we've been watching all season. I love that Grayson Allen took one right there. I should give an infinity pancakes for that, but I'm giving two because he didn't see it coming. But I love the play. And then three, Ja Morant. Listen, this is insanity. Oh, my word. The elevation, the ability, and then the power in the dunk. This wasn't just like barely getting there. The dude's head is at the top of the backboard. That's how much lift this guy has on this flush. I know it's old, but I'm still giving that thing three pancakes because that is as nasty as it gets in the NBA. Three big ones for that. Dude just up there soaring and then lets it go.
Absolutely love it. And we got a bonus pancake, I'm told, Saturday. What do we have?
Oh, Greeny, this is you in high school. Look right here. You're going in. No. Excuse me. No. Excuse me.
No.
She gave him the absolute no. This is just a – listen, if you're that guy, you are now meme history.
What do you think happened there?
Oh, I don't know. Amazing.
Like, they're not that kind of relationship. His breath smelled bad. Like, what do you think went on there?
I agree with that. Fully requires an explanation that we
need
do
to
not
know more.
Every
what
picture tells a story.
Moment.
That one's not a good one for that fella. All right, super well done. We're running it back as we continue in a moment. Are we starting to see the James Harden of old? And if so, what does that mean for the Sixers? Could it be a title? Stephen A. will answer that question. He'll be in our studio. We're getting up with you on ESPN.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.